chapter, longest chapter. I'm going to read through this. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So there was a famine in the land of bread, in the house of bread. And a man of Bethlehem in Judea went to sojourn in a country of Moab. Now, what we don't realize there is that the people in Bethlehem and Moab were real arch enemies. There was no love lost between these two countries at all. They really didn't get on at all. It says, and he and his wife and his two sons. And the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife was Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. And they were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judea. They went into the country of Moab and remained there. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. Okay, so there's been a famine. She's gone to this land, to an unknown country, but then her husband has died, and she's been left with her two sons. Now, these sons took Moabite wives. The names of one was Orpah, and the name of the other was Ruth, and they lived there for about 10 years. And it says, and both Mahlon and Chilion died, okay? So that the woman was left without her two sons and without her husband. So she's having a really rotten time here, isn't she? Then she arose with her daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the field of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. So she set out from the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law, and they went on their way to return to the land of Judea. Now, don't forget, at this point, this is Naomi going back to the land that she knows, but the two daughters-in-law, of course, are going to a country that is full, effectively, of their kind of enemies, their arch-enemies. But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, go return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. And the Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices, and they wept. And they said to her, no, we will return with you to your people. But Naomi said, turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may become your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear sons, would you therefore wait till they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. Now, that's interesting, isn't it? We've been talking about the Bible and about how we take the Bible. I mean, do we actually think here that the hand of the Lord has been against Naomi? I don't think so. Well, it's interesting, isn't it, how when we read the Bible, we don't just read it, but we do interpret it, because we can see that this is, we don't just read the words and say, therefore, we can see that this is obviously Naomi wrestling with what she's wrestling with. The Bible is an incredibly human story. It's divinely inspired, but it's incredibly human. When they lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And she said, see, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. But Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. Now, this is the big kind of words that we will often hear repeated. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. And your people shall be my people, and your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts me from you. Wow. And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the woman said, is this Naomi? But she said to them, do not call me Naomi, but call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. Same point again. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me? I wonder if we ever feel, you know, it's okay to say these things sometimes, that this is how we feel. I don't think God is offended or upset if we express ourselves sometimes during these times of difficulty. So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law with her, who returned from the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Great. So Should we have another song? Let's do it. Saw that you're talking about love and failing. I think the book of Ruth is a story about love and failing, isn't it? Yeah, interesting. I would go to the ends of the earth. See, one of the things I said, one of the things I really like about the book of Ruth is it doesn't really give a lot of explanation to what's going on. I mean, even in that first chapter, so much has happened. Even in the first few verses, so much happens. And it doesn't really give us very much explanation. You know, why did Orpah do what she did? Was she the practical one? Was she the pragmatic one? You know, why did she choose when she said, I was going to stay with you, but then Naomi said, don't, and then she chose to go away? Why did she do what she did? And then we have Naomi, who decides to call herself Mara, which means bitterness. I mean, what happened to her? Her loss seems to have shaped, really, kind of shaped her. I wonder if this morning you feel like there have been losses in your life that shape kind of who you are now. And I think that's kind of a very normal way, isn't it, of living, because death is just as much a part of life, really, as anything. She feels like her life has been turned upside down, that odds have been stacked against her. Having to move to Moab must have been a really big thing. You know, they must have been desperate. Maybe the last place they wanted to go. They were displaced by forces way beyond the control. And then we have what we call like it's like a Hebrew joke or sarcasm, isn't it? As Naomi turns to them and says, well, look, you know, shall I have a baby now? And then are you going to wait for this baby to grow up? And then are you going to marry this child? It's also, also human, isn't it? Incredibly human. And then we have Ruth. What a big speech. What a big word. What big commitments. Again, doesn't explain why. I mean, why does Ruth do what she does? I mean, is she a bit clingy, you know? I don't know. I mean, is she a very committed person? Why does Ruth behave like she did? Because I don't think it's normal, is it? Because for Ruth, as a widow, to go and live in a land which is unknown, surrounded by your enemies, she's very, very vulnerable there, isn't she? Very, very vulnerable. Yeah, she went from the known into the unknown. And I think, if you want me to explain in a few words why I think Ruth is one of my heroes, it's just that being prepared to go from the known into the unknown. To go from the known into the unknown. As I say, it's deeply countercultural. I wonder if you've ever felt that there was something that you should do that you feel is absolutely right to do, but everything and everyone is telling you not to do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. But somehow Ruth stuck to this, that somehow there was something deep down inside of her that said, I am going to do this. Doesn't matter what you say to me, I am going to see this through, and I am going to do this. Incredible story, isn't it, really? You know, we have different characters and different responses. Just a question for you. When we read that first chapter, were you kind of judging the different people? Were you kind of thinking like, well, Orpah, that's a little bit weak, or Ruth, you know, why are you doing what you're doing? And Naomi, well, come on, Naomi, you know, there were so many different characters, weren't there, doing different things. I don't know about you, I just found I don't judge any of the characters in that story at all. And I do wonder sometimes whether we can be very hard on ourselves, can't we? We kind of look back at our lives when we've done things or made choices and said things. And it's very easy to be kind of hard on ourselves. Why did I do that? But it's why did you do that? But you did that because you were in that situation at that time. And we're all different, and we're very human, aren't we? And I think the story also teaches me not to judge ourselves and not to judge each other. But, you know, sometimes... You know, there's a great way in which this story, there really isn't any control, is there? You know, there's all kinds of things going on, but there's somehow, again, a bit like Phil talked about in the last service, there is this overall movement towards good and towards wholeness, isn't there? There is the movement. Some people talk about the Book of Ruth being there because it's actually the heritage of King David, isn't it? That then Jesus would come from that line, so it's kind of explaining kind of how that started. But what a fantastic start, if you like, to the life of the history of Jesus, that it started with these women making these choices, very human, real, raw choices. Great. Should we have a couple of songs? And then I've got just one final thought, and then we'll probably finish around 5:30. I think we'll take the offering during this first song. Listen, if you're a visitor here, please just let it pass you by. We're really pleased that you're here. If you'd like to give, that's fine, but please don't feel any obligation. We're just thrilled that you're with us this morning.
Okay, would you like to stand?
Oh, Jesus, Son of God, so full of grace and truth. The Father's saving word, so wonderful are you. The angels long to see, and prophets search to find, the glory we have seen revealed. You shone upon the earth, but who must prophesy, for you were the Messiah who came and walked upon the earth. Your glory we have seen, the one and only King, and now you're living in our hearts. Light of the world, light of the world, light of the world, you shine upon us. You shine upon us.
In you all things.
In you all things were made. Nothing without you. In heaven and on earth, all things are held in you. And yet you became flesh, living as one of us. Shine upon us.
And yet you became.
And yet you became flesh, living as one of us, under the shadow of the cross. Where through the blood you shed, you have made peace again. Peace for the world. So loves. Light of the world, light of the world, light of the world, you shine upon us. Light of the world, light of the world, light of the world, you shine upon us. Mistakes, but you have new mercies for me every day. Your love never fails. You stay the same through the ages. Your love never changes. There may be pain in the night, but joy comes in. And strong and the waters deep. I'm not alone in these open seas, 'cause your love never fails. The chasm was far too wide, never thought I'd reach the other side. Your love never fails. Stay the same through the ages. Your love never changes. There may be pain in the night, but joy comes in the morning. And when the oceans rage, I don't have to be afraid, because I know that you love.
It's another good choice of song, isn't it? You didn't know we were talking about Ruth, did you? No. I think there's a theme emerging through this, which I'm kind of feeling as I'm going through. It wasn't necessarily the major take-home I wanted to put across, but I think there is that theme, isn't there, of unfailing love. And as I said right at the beginning, we have a God who loves us, a God who is not angry with you. He loves you. There's nothing that God needs to do, nothing you can do to make him love you any more, any less. He just loves you. There's that unfailing love given to all of us. But then, of course, it doesn't just stop there, does it? There is a challenge for us all to reflect that unfailing love to people around us. And this story of Ruth is a really interesting story of that. But I'd like to kind of come back into that. We'll come into land with that in a few minutes. But I'd like to change tack just slightly. Final thought from the book of Ruth. Are we back up here? Great. Okay. Here we go. That isn't a picture of Ruth, by the way. They didn't have cameras at the time. I was listening to a really, really good podcast. Does anyone like listening to podcasts? I love listening to podcasts. I find I can be very lot more mindful about what I listen to. I do like listening to the radio, especially Radio 4. You pick up a lot of interesting things. But the great thing about podcasts is that you, unlike with the radio, you can end up listening to lots of stuff you really don't want to listen to. But with podcasts, you can really feed into things that are interesting or helpful. And I was listening to one from a top kind of scientist / nutritionalist. And she, at the end, just summarized for her what her core values were in her life. She wasn't religious in any way, or she certainly didn't say that she was, but she said, she kind of explained what her core values were. And she says she tries to express at least one of these every day. And the way she remembers it is the word gloves, which is really clever because I can still remember it because of that. What do you call it? Is it an acronym? Is that the word? A mnemonic, yeah. So we're going to go backwards, and I want you to see if you can guess what the key principles in life that she says that you need, or she feels that she needs, to have a really full and healthy life. So what do you think S stands for? Sleep. What did someone else say there? Security. Or strawberries. Yeah. No. Well, maybe. So we have sleep, and she argues that it's no good kind of having lots of sleep deprivation and then somehow trying to catch up at the weekend or whatever. She says we really do need a minimum amount of sleep, and we're all a little bit different in that way, but that's a key thing in life. And if any of you have got a smartwatch, that's a really good use for that, because the smartwatch will be monitoring how much sleep you're having, and at the end of the week you can kind of see where you've averaged out, so you can see whether it's kind of generally good or not. So sleep. What about E, anybody? Empathy? No. And exercise. She says regular exercise, particularly exercising outside. She says that a lot of the endorphins you get just from being outside, particularly being in nature, is just a way just to keep healthy and that. Right, this is an interesting one. O, anyone? V, yes, sorry. I can't spell. So, yes, V. Come on, it's an easy one. No? Come on, Cheryl, V. V. Vegetables. Thank you, John. Vegetables and fruit, she says. Absolutely key. They say five a day, at least five a day. Maybe more if you can. Right. Oh, are we happy now? Can I do O now? Thank you. You know, I talked about women being prime movers and what have you. Don't push it. Oh, this is an interesting one. The man who said the last one may not be so happy with this one. Oh. Yes. Organic, which I know is tricky because it's expensive, but they do say a lot of chemicals and that. Anyway, we'll move on. Now, bear in mind, this was like very scientific, and she'd spent the whole podcast talking about exercise, talking about marathon running, ultra running, she was talking about exercising, she was talking about nutrition. Then she got, which were for her, because I've spun it round, the top two things that for her were probably the most important things in her life. Can anyone guess what L was? Love. Exactly. She said having that loving outlook, loving the people around you, loving the earth that we're in, just love as a value that we seek to express all the time is actually key, not just for the well-being of the people around us, but your well-being. And can you guess what G was? Not generosity, but that would have been a good one. Gloves, good thought. I see what you did there. Gratitude. You see, I don't know, and I'm going to finish with this. I don't know why Ruth did what she did, why she went from the known into the unknown, but she is my hero today and forever. But there is, with Ruth, this core values, isn't there, of unfailing love. Unfailing love. There is something in this very human story that we can learn in terms of how, you know, when Naomi's saying that God has left me and has done this to me, but there is just this sense of unfailing love that ironically in this story is really expressed through the human relationships with each other, which is interesting. But there's also just that sense of gratitude I get from Ruth to Naomi. What is gratitude? I think gratitude is the ability to see the good in things, to celebrate, to focus on the good things. I don't know about you, it's just so easy, isn't it, just to point out what's wrong? It's just so easy, isn't it, to point out what's wrong? But this lady said, and I think this book of Ruth teaches as well about gratitude, about focusing on the good. And I've even found this week, as I've been preparing for this morning, even to keep saying the word to yourself, gratitude. Gratitude. It's a great word, isn't it? Lots of T's in there. Gratitude. Gratitude. Let's not be a people who focuses on what's wrong. But let's be people who are constantly searching out and looking for the things that are good. Because that we believe, you know, God is love, God is good, God is all around us. So ultimately, with an attitude of gratitude, you're looking to find the God around you, aren't you? Looking to see how God has expressed himself around you. So this summer, people, as I come to the end of this first fun summer service, I am sometimes known as Uncle Fun. I'm sorry, I don't know why you're laughing. In a different dimension, maybe in that Marvel dimension. But maybe this year, maybe this summer, maybe that could be your focus, gratitude, gratitude, think gratitude. As you're out and about, think gratitude. As you start to get a bit grumpy and fed up about things, gratitude, gratitude, gratitude. Even just say the word, gratitude. And what if, you know, it's interesting with the names. I suspect, I mean, who would call their names? What were the names? Were the two sons? There was, and what did the names mean? Sick and pining, sick and pining. Who would call their children that? I suspect the meanings of those names followed later. I suspect they followed later. I do. Although then Naomi chooses her name Mara. She says, I've chosen this because it means bitterness. So maybe not. I don't know. I can't answer. I don't have an answer to that question. But what if those two, the meanings of those names were chosen later? So then that just got me thinking. I'll leave you with this thought. If for your name this morning, what if they were to decide later, maybe when we've passed away, what does your name mean in terms of who you've been as a person? And what if they decided that your name means gratitude or unfailing love? That would be great, wouldn't it? That would be great. Shall we have one last song, Al, and then we'll finish. Thank you, everybody.